Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Friday, April 10th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. Concord Native Poised to Climb Mount Everest by Ruth Thompson from Wicked Local. Ty Andrews was planning a career in music when he got into running in high school. From there, things took off, literally and figuratively. He ran competitively in college, qualifying twice for the Olympic marathon trials, and he holds nearly 100 national and international distance and trail running records. He then moved on to mountain climbing. Running and climbing aren't as separate as people think, at least the way I do them, said Andrews, 35, a Concord native. I came up as a track and field runner, then got into ultra running and trail running, and the natural extension of that is just going higher and steeper. His whole focus over the last few years has been bringing a runner's mentality, pacing, efficiency, physiological preparation to the big Himalayan peaks. He is targeting a summit window for the world's highest peak, Mount Everest, of roughly May 10th to the 25th, weather dependent. I leave for Nepal in early April and will spend about a month acclimatizing on other mountains in the Himalayas before moving to Everest Base Camp once the weather looks good, he said. The goal is to become the fastest person to climb the tallest mountain, 29,031 feet, in the world, without supplemental oxygen. Climbing without supplemental oxygen means you're only breathing the ambient air that's actually up there, which above 8,000 meters, 26,246 feet, has roughly a third of the oxygen concentration we're used to at sea level, Andrews explained. It's a completely different physiological challenge, and it's why so few people have done it, which is what makes it exciting to me. As for the dangers, Andrews said everything on Everest carries real risk, including the altitude, the cold, objective hazards like avalanches, and the Khumbu icefall, a dangerous ever-changing glacier on Everest, known for its towering ice blocks and deep crevices. I try to be honest with myself about that, rather than pretend otherwise, Andrews said. I'm not cavalier about it either. I have robust logistics, a support crew, feel confident in my fitness and preparation for a project like this. I also trust myself to know if I need to turn around, I'll do it. Currently based in Ecuador, Andrews has spent spring and autumn during the past few years in Nepal. He has accumulated more than 100 speed records climbing some of the world's most challenging mountains, including Mount Manaslu, 26,781 feet. The world's eighth highest, where he set the fastest known time of 9 hours and 52 minutes without supplemental oxygen. He also set records on Kilimanjaro, Aconcagua, and Ama Dablama, among others. While I would never claim to be a traditional alpinist in the classic sense, I have a lot of experience moving fast at extreme altitude, he said. Everest is just the logical next step. The speed record there is something I believe I can break. Andrews probably spends 40 to 60 hours a week training. I'm based in Quito, Ecuador, at about 3,000 meters, 9,842 feet altitude, which gives me a baseline acclimatization advantage year-round, he said. My daily training is mostly long aerobic volume, several hours a day of hiking and running, mostly in heart rate zones 1 and 2, with threshold intervals mixed in a couple of times a week. I also do hypoxic sessions on a stationary bike with an altitude generator that simulates up to 9,000 meters, which helps prime my body for what is coming. On top of that, there is a strength program to protect his body for load carrying, and a lot of attention to blood work, nutrition, and recovery. Once I am in Nepal, the acclimatization rotations are the real work. Progressively higher overnight stays to get my body adapted before the summit push. On April 6th, he was back in Massachusetts, where he stopped by the human-powered health performance lab in Wellesley. HPH reached out to me to support my climb at the end of 2025. And I went in for a really robust assessment before beginning my training block in January, Andrew said. I had had some testing done before, but the array of tests and the knowledge of the folks at the lab just blew me away. He made profound changes to his training recently based on the results of that initial test, specifically focusing a lot more on the strength training in the gym. Andrew said a huge part of why he does this is to show what is possible through methodological, science-based preparation and to inspire the athletes I work with through the Chosky Foundation, he said, in reference to a 501c3 nonprofit that provides scholarships for coaching and grants for underserved athletes. If a kid in Ecuador sees someone pushing the limits of human performance on the world's highest mountain and thinks, maybe I can do something that seems hard or scary, that is honestly more meaningful to me than time on the clock, Andrew said. A graduate of Concord Academy in 2008, and Tufts University in 2013, Andrews still has close ties to Greater Boston. He said family and friends are genuinely supportive of his climb. As for Everest, Andrews feels a great respect for the mountain and is humbled by the scale of nature there. There is something like nervousness that comes from ceding control in a situation like that, he said. I mostly feel grateful and excited. I have done my best to control as much as I can on my end, and there is a certain amount of trust or faith you need to have that the things outside your control will go well. Will the High Court limit mail-in ballots? SCOTUS ruling could affect elections in Massachusetts. By Maureen Gropa and Margie Cullen from USA Today. The Supreme Court's ruling on mail-in ballots could affect elections in Massachusetts. The High Court signaled March 23rd that it could back a Republican effort to stop states from counting late-arriving mail-in ballots, a decision that would be a win for President Donald Trump and would lead to stricter voting rules around the country. During more than 2 hours of oral arguments, the court's conservative majority sounded skeptical of a Mississippi law allowing ballots cast by Election Day to be counted if they're received within 5 days. Justice Samuel Alito said not having a firm deadline raises many other questions, including how long a grace period can be and whether ballots have to be postmarked. You have a variety of line-drawing problems, he told Mississippi's attorney. But Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, one of the court's three liberal judges, said it is up to Congress and the states, not the court, to make such decisions, And the fact that Congress is considering legislation to end grace periods shows lawmakers they're currently allowed. I think we have several federal statutes that suggest that Congress was aware of post-election day ballot deadlines that the states had enacted, she said. The decision, which is expected by June, could have wide-reaching consequences as nearly 30 states, including Massachusetts, have a grace period that allows at least some late-arriving ballots to be counted. In biennial state elections in Massachusetts, which are the November elections every 2 years, where state and federal positions, like district attorney, governor, U.S. representative, U.S. senator, and president, can be voted on. Ballots are accepted up to 3 days after the election, as long as they are postmarked by Election Day. This law would be affected if the Supreme Court rules against late-arriving mail-in ballots, according to the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office. Massachusetts also has a 10-day grace period for postmarked ballots mailed from outside the country in all state and city general elections, a law that is primarily used by military voters and overseas citizens. A majority of states have similar grace periods, and it is unclear how a ruling against late ballots would affect them. Secretary of the Commonwealth Bill Galvin's office said he strongly supports a short grace period after an election for ballots that were voted and postmarked by Election Day to arrive. Eligible voters should not be disenfranchised just because the Postal Service cannot be relied upon to deliver the ballots promptly, said Deb O'Malley, the Secretary's communication director. Eliminating the grace period would result in disenfranchisement for a number of military voters, disabled voters, and other eligible citizens who are unable to vote in person through no fault of their own. In all other elections in Massachusetts, ballots must reach the local election office or drop box by the close of the polls on Election Day. Voting by mail has decreased since its peak during the COVID-19 pandemic, but nearly 30% of voters still cast a ballot that way in 2024 elections. Democrats are more likely than Republicans to vote by mail. Supporters of mail-in voting say it makes it easier for people, including retirees, service members, and rural residents, to cast a ballot. And grace periods like those provided by Massachusetts prevent people from losing their vote over the Postal Service's delays. But Trump has long railed against mail-in voting as vulnerable to fraud, claiming it cost him the 2020 election. Trump has separately tried to end both grace periods and mail-in voting altogether through both an executive order and by pressuring Congress to pass legislation. The Justice Department is currently backing the Republican Party's challenge to Mississippi's law. Documented instances of fraud related to voting by mail are rare, according to the Election Data and Science Lab from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. But when ballots counted after Election Day affect the outcome of a race, that can raise doubts about their legitimacy, even when there is no fraud, critics argue. If the election is going to turn on late arriving ballots in a way that means what everybody kind of thought was the result on Election Day ends up being the opposite a week later, 21 days later, the losers are not going to accept that result. Paul Clement, the attorney for the Republican Party, told the Supreme Court, and that is bad for our system. The legal argument the Republican National Committee and the Justice Department is making turns on the definition of when an election has occurred because federal law sets a specific date for U.S. elections. The Republican Party and the Trump administration say that an election is the day by which ballots must be received. Mississippi says election is when the voters choose a candidate. States must make a final choice of officers by election day, said Mississippi's Solicitor General Scott Stewart. That is the plain meaning of an election. But some of the conservative justices asked how a voter's mailed ballot could be considered final when some states allow voters to recall their absentee ballots. And Justice Brett Kavanaugh emphasized that grace periods became popular only in recent years, suggesting that there is more historical support for a specific deadline. He asked whether states with grace periods would have time to adjust before the midterm elections if the court sides with the GOP. Clement said a decision from the court by June would allow plenty of time. The case, Watson versus the Republican National Committee, is not the only litigation that could affect future elections. The justices are also deciding whether to overturn restrictions on coordinated spending between parties and candidates, and whether to curtail protections against racial discrimination in voting. When is tax day 2026? Can you request a filing extension? By Bailey Allen and Daniel DeVise, USA Today Network, New England. Tax Day 2026 is this month. Here's what to know about federal filing deadlines and extensions. Most U.S. citizens and permanent residents who work in the U.S. have to file tax returns, according to the Internal Revenue Service, IRS. The threshold is typically based on an individual's age and income. You can check whether you are required to file a tax return on the IRS website. As of March 27th, the IRS had received more than 88.4 million tax returns for the current filing season. The agency had issued approximately $221.7 billion in refunds, with the average refund totaling $3,521. Tax returns are due Wednesday, April 15th this year. If you don't expect to file your return taxes by then, you can request a six-month extension. If you fail to file your federal tax return on time, the standard penalty is 5% of any tax due for every month the return is late, up to 25% of the unpaid balance. If you file a return but fail to pay any taxes you owe, or if you get an extension, you typically face a much smaller penalty of 0.5% of any unpaid amount. Are there exceptions to the April 15th tax deadline? Yes, the IRS extends the annual tax deadline for taxpayers who live or do business in areas afflicted by natural disasters. This year, the list includes extended deadlines for some tax filings in Alaska, Montana, and Washington State, but none in New England. Taxpayers who request extensions will have until Thursday, October 15th to file their tax returns. An extension doesn't buy you more time to pay your taxes. You still have to pay any amount due to avoid the penalties, but you have more time to complete your forms. When you should have received your 1099 forms. If you're a freelancer, an independent contractor, or earn income from other sources outside a traditional job, you should have received a 1099 tax form by February 15th, according to the IRS. Employers are generally required to send the forms by the end of January. When you should have received your W-2 forms, your employer is also required to have sent you the W-2 tax form by January 31st, the IRS said. Quarterly tax due dates. If you earn income that is not subject to withholding taxes, you are typically required to make estimated tax payments to the IRS. You can do this every quarter or through one annualized estimate. The annualized estimate is due on April 15th. The quarterly payments for 2026 are due by the following dates. The first payment by April 15th. The second payment by June 15th. The third payment by September 15th. And the fourth payment by January 15th, 2027. Where's my tax refund? The IRS says it can take weeks after filing your refund to be processed. Most taxpayers who file electronically receive their refunds within 21 days from the date the IRS receives them, the IRS said. Paper returns typically take longer, usually around 6 to 8 weeks. You can track the status of your refund on the IRS website, IRS2GO mobile app, or by calling 800-829-1954. U.S. bank profits set to rise on deals, but Iran war has fueled uncertainty in outlook. By Nivedita Balu from Reuters. Large U.S. banks are set to post higher quarterly earnings on strong interest income and investment banking fees, analyst estimates show, though investors will focus on forecasts as geopolitical risks involving Iran add to macroeconomic uncertainty. Goldman Sachs will kick off earnings in the season for banks on April 13th. The largest U.S. lender, J.P. Morgan Chase, will report on April 14th along with Wells Fargo and Citigroup. Bank of America and Morgan Stanley will report on April 15th. The banks will report results for the 3 months ending March 31st, during which global markets swung as investors grappled with uncertainty tied to wars in the Middle East and Ukraine, volatile oil prices, and broader geopolitical risks. President Donald Trump said on April 7th that he had agreed to a 2-week ceasefire with Iran, less than 2 hours before his deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face widespread attacks on its civilian infrastructure. Still, several companies sought large mergers and acquisitions before financing conditions changed, leading to bursts of deal-making and trading activity. The highlight of the first quarter has been robust deal-making as nearly 24 mega-deals worth over $10 billion were reached globally, along with 40 deals valued at over $5 billion, according to LSEG data. Jefferies analysts noted global M&A proxy fees of $11.3 billion in the first quarter, led by Goldman. Another focus on earnings calls will likely be the outlook for 2026 loan growth, especially commercial and industrial and commercial real estate, said Gerald Cassidy, an analyst at RBC Capital Markets. Federal Reserve data suggests commercial and industrial growth accelerated in the first quarter, but uncertainty regarding the Middle East war and the subsequent rise in oil prices could weigh on the outlook if the conflict is protracted, he said. In February, J.P. Morgan Chase said it expects investment banking fees and markets revenue to log strong growth in the first quarter, easing concerns that a recent equity market sell-off has hit deal pipelines. Bank of America expects interest income to grow at least 7% and investment banking fees to climb 10% in the first quarter, its co-president Dean Athanasia said on March 10th. Citigroup CEO Jane Fraser said in March, the bank expects mid-teens percentage growth in its investment banking fees and markets revenue in the first quarter, as the Wall Street Bank sees strong activity in both divisions, despite escalating global tensions. Wells Fargo expects loans to grow this year, betting on credit cards and autos, while momentum in mortgages will pick up, Chief Financial Officer Mike Santomassimo said in February. Greenland Prime Minister hits back at Trump's Arctic insult, Copenhagen. Greenland's Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen called on NATO allies to stand together to defend international law as he pushed back against President Donald Trump's latest comments about the Arctic island. Trump vented his frustration with NATO's unwillingness to get involved in the war on Iran, saying in a social media post that the alliance was not around when needed and would not be there if we need them again. Remember Greenland, that poor, big, poorly run piece of ice. Nielsen rejected the characterization, we are not some piece of ice. We are a proud population of 57,000 people, working every single day as good global citizens in full respect for all of our allies, he told Reuters. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.